So it was 3 weeks ago yesterday, kind of the night of that big ice storm, that I got a phone call from one of the priests who's on the assignment board for the Archdiocese. And he said, hey, on Monday, I'd like to talk to you about the assignment at Immaculate Conception in St. Wenceslaus, but I don't want you worrying about it over the weekend. Okay. And I think I can say with honesty that I didn't worry, but I did pray. And you probably gathered in the last 4 years with me that the saints are a particularly important part of my own spiritual life. And over the course of almost 9 years as a priest, I've really started to develop friendships with the saints who are patrons of the parishes I've been assigned to. And so, I mean, how beautiful, kind of thinking about, okay, so Immaculate Conception, Our Lady, who is the example par excellence of saying yes to God's will, but also St. Wenceslaus. Over the 4 years that I was here as an associate, I went back over and over and over to St. Wenceslaus as an example. Because if you don't know the story of St. Wenceslaus, there's a whole lot more there than him just being the Czech saint. He lived in a time where if you ended up a martyr, generally the story was pretty simple. You went to go and evangelize pagans and you were killed. That was it. You could make an incredible political thriller out of the life of St. Wenceslaus because his martyrdom is incredibly complicated in many ways. Because yes, there is this tension between the paganism of old and the emergence of Christianity, but this was a nation that had already accepted Christianity, and it was typified in his grandparents like St. Ludmilla. But there were factions in the family, and some of them followed the Christian message. Others still clung to the paganism and the power structures of the past. So this is where Ludmilla is martyred. And so then, an age younger than me, he has to step in as king in the midst of this. And so he's stepping in, representing the Christian faith, a time where there are still plenty of pagans who are not just attached to the old religious ways, but the old ways of the power structures. And you have intergenerational division within the family, and you have international forces that are very interested in just what direction this Wenceslaus is going to go. And so, yes, he's ultimately martyred for saying yes to the gospel of Jesus Christ, but he's also martyred for saying yes to the gospel of Jesus Christ in the face of family tension, in the face of international pressure, in the face of difficult and confusing power structures. And so he is this great witness, I think, for us, this great patron in our two parishes of what it means to look to and to say yes to Jesus in complicated circumstances. Because I think there are some among us, myself included, we'd go, it would just be really simple. Maybe not easy, but simple if someone came and said, reject your faith or I will kill you. Okay, well, that's a fairly easy thing to say yes to. But it's harder when life becomes complicated. And the question isn't, do I say yes to Jesus or do I not? But how do I say yes to Jesus? How do I say yes to Jesus when the way is not clear? When there are lots of voices speaking into my life? And so saints like Wenceslaus are great witnesses to looking for Jesus and making him the focus so that we know what the next step should be. The wise men become great examples of this as well. Because they are ultimately, yes, following the star, but ultimately looking for the one that that star represents. And their whole life is changed by the encounter with Jesus. Because kings isn't an accurate term for them. They're magi, they're court magicians, representing foreign powers and kings, also representing foreign pantheons. They're pagans, and yet here they come and they are doing homage, laying prostrate before Jesus, acknowledging his divinity by their bodily actions, but then also by the gifts that they bring. There is a kind of renunciation of everything that they stand for in the actions that they're taking. They're just focused on him. And then, when it comes time to go back to their own country, they're told to go back by a different way. And so that means that now they're no longer following the star, but rather following God himself. Pope Benedict said really beautifully that they found not a child whose destiny was determined by the stars, but rather they found in the child the God who told the stars where to go. And of course, we as disciples of Jesus know that Jesus is not just born in the past, or that he doesn't reign just as king at a distance, but that he is Emmanuel, he is God with us. And so his reign is exercised in his closeness to us. And so this is what we open ourselves to experiencing. We find ourselves as parishes, as people, in complicated times. And so I'm grateful, I'm excited, I'm joyful to come back to serve you as pastor. But I'm not doing so with an agenda. You could go tear through the boxes in my office right now as I'm unpacking, and there's nowhere in there a roadmap for the next year for us. I have ideas. I'm committed to the priestly things of celebrating the sacraments. But in terms of where it is that God is leading us, that's something for us to discern together. And we do discernment not by figuring everything out from here to the horizon, but by looking close to the God who is close and saying, okay, what's the next step? We are looking to Jesus together. He's with us. He desires to lead us. My spiritual director a few months ago, when I was kind of dealing with the stresses and pressures of going back to being a pastor again and entering into a new assignment, was sharing all of that with him, and he listened, and then he just looked at me and he asked a very simple question. So remind me, whose parish is that? The answer is Jesus's, if you weren't clear. And so in those couple of days, hearing, oh, I'd like to talk to you about Immaculate Conception and St. Wenceslas, but I don't want you to worry, to actually having the conversation, I prayed with St. Wenceslas, with Our Lady. I also remembered those words from my director. These are Jesus's parishes. And as I said in my bulletin article this weekend, Jesus is not done with us. This is the good news of that first reading. Right? Yes, okay, there is healing, there is a darkness that we are in the midst of facing, but we listen to what God desires to do with his people. That call to rise up in splendor is still there. That God shines not just upon us from afar, but from within by his presence here Eucharistically. And so he still desires to make of our parishes a light and a witness right here, downtown Cedar Rapids. And so we're called on this beautiful feast day maybe to go by a different way than we had expected. And we don't know the entirety of the way forward. But we know that the one who asks us to walk it is good, and that he's with us as we walk it. So as we receive our Lord in the Eucharist today, we just ask him to make the closeness of his presence more evident to us, that he would give us the grace of that discernment to know how to say yes to him in the midst of complicated times. And we'd ask him to to bless us, to illuminate us as we begin this new stage in our journey as parishes. How good it is that we have the chance to begin again together on this Feast of the Epiphany, when we see the desire of the Lord to reveal Himself, to reveal His heart, to reveal His closeness to us once again.